Welcome to Widdit Affixes Unsupervised, a podcast series that brings you personal perspective from the front line of modern visual effects. This is a closed door session, so come on in and shut the door behind you. My name is Wims, and in this episode, we'll be talking about our work on The Batman with Anders Langlands, VFX supervisor.
My job was basically taking notes from Dan Lemon, who was the overall visual effects supervisor for Warner Brothers, also ex-Weta himself, and Matt Reeves, the director, and then turning them into instructions, guidance, like gentle nudges to the rest of the team.
Interpretive dance,
which sometimes was interpreted very well, sometimes was blatantly ignored.
That's my job.
Joining him, we have compositing supervisor, Beck Veach.
I struggled to interpret Anders' dance of Dan's notes. No, seriously, I take Dan and Anders' notes and frame them in a way that is sensible for the comp team to address.
Sensible? So what do you mean? They're not sensible by default? And I just...
Yes. Yeah. No. We'll get there with sensible.
Last but not least, we have Stephen Tong, CG supervisor.
Obviously, I also took Dan's and Anders' notes as well, and also overseeing the pipeline and the other 3D departments.
To set the stage, let's also talk about our relationship to the Batman character himself. I'll start. I don't really have one. I was more of a Superman fan as a kid, I'd say. I've seen all the Batman films that they've been. They were quite good. I quite like Tim Burton's one. Yeah. Does anyone else have a more interesting relationship to Batman than I do?
I certainly do.
You do?
I do. It's really interesting because my second film that I worked on was on Nolan's Batman doing the car chase sequence.
Oh, nice. What, in The Dark Knight?
Yes. Oh, yeah, Batman Begins? Yeah, the first one.
First one that he did.
Yeah, Batman Begins, yeah. So the funny car where he ducks into it and is, like, driving it from inside the engine, it's very bizarre. But,
Nolan did everything practically, so what were you guys doing? Just, like, a couple of wire removals and touch-up?
No. Doing a lot of stuff. But, yes, that was my my second film, so I feel quite chuffed that we got to work on the car chase sequence in this one.
Yeah. Awesome, Stephen.
That's cool. My first impression about on Batman also is the Michael Keaton's version, which he kind of defined the image of Batman in my head. And speaking of Batman Begins, I was in DNet and they done all the Nolan's Batman, and I managed to not to be on any of those.
Right.
For some reason.
Like, so you've been avoiding Batman for your entire career, is what you're saying.
Not intentionally, yeah. But yeah, so basically this one is my Batman movie.
Popping your bat cherry, is what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Cool, man. That's nice. Anders, maybe you should start. Oh, that's me. I'll talk to myself in the third person. Anders, maybe you should start with telling us about how the set and how the film was managed and put together. I didn't get to visit the set, really, unfortunately, on this one. COVID kind of got in the way of that. I mean, we first started talking about the show back in mid-2019, I think, when I was first got involved with it, and started talking to Dan and his team, who were based in London at the time, which is where a lot of the film was shot at Leavesden Studios. And I went over there, actually, in December of 2019. Got to visit those guys on at Leavesden, and see what they were building, see the Batcave, or first constructions of the Batcave. And
you were there?
The beginning. I saw it. I think they'd only sort of built and surfaced a couple of platforms at that point. Okay. And it was kind of a skeleton of what would be the actual set. And saw the start of the backlot set, which formed the area around the base of the bridge in Gotham,
right,
which at the time was the work that we were supposed to be doing. So we focused a lot on that. Yeah. And of course, that changed further down the line, which we'll come back to. But then, of course, I think when I was flying back, it was all in the news, like everything, you know, things were kicking off in China. And then, of course, by early the following year, everything shut down all of a sudden. So, yeah, what definitely wasn't able to go and visit while they were shooting, which is a shame because that's normally a really good experience and allows you to get deeply involved in the process that's going on there.
Especially like for the car chase sequence, it would be quite fun to be on set for that.
Yeah.
It would be very tough though.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been a lot of nights outside in the freezing cold.
Raining, which, yeah.
Or not raining, as the case may be.
Yes.
Worrying about the fact that it wasn't raining. but they did blow some stuff up, which would have been cool, definitely. But no, we missed that, unfortunately. But yeah, they were obviously one of the first shows that, you know, had to deal with getting ramped back up again for, you know, with the COVID protocols to try and keep everyone safe while allowing production to continue. And that, you know, obviously affected how they chose to shoot things and how the work came our way. So, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that we had to do with, you know, multiple crowd passes and or no crowds at all, like in the nightclub fight scene there where it was, yeah, they had about 10 people at a time in any one shot. And so had to CG in a lot of people there. So there's a bunch of changes that we had to do to manage that and to, you know, allow them to create the shots they wanted to get while still, you know, trying to stop everyone getting COVID. Removing people's masks that they forgot to take off just before the shot because they were obviously taking masks off, shooting a take, and then putting masks straight back on again. Well, you know, everyone who's in front of the camera, and sometimes people forgot to take them off, so we had to paint out a couple of those. I think that's all there is to say about that, I think. What was it like re-teaming with Matt Reeves? I mean, Matt's definitely got a certain style, I think, that he likes to do, and especially in terms of like how he likes to shoot things. Like, I always find it's quite naturalistic in tone, which is fun to work with, and he likes to understand the logic behind everything. So there's always got to be a process that goes in there, and so that's kind of nice.
There's certain echoes in shots in the film, I think, that you see that we did in Fortress in Apes, where you see it's completely dark and then you see him, you know, get shot at by multiple enemies. Like, that's straight out of, I looked at that and went, I know that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although that was nice. That was actually ripped from another movie.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, but it's nice to look at.
It was a Christian Bale film, and so there's a Batman link there. What was it called again? I can't remember. It's a Christian Bale sci-fi movie. I think they were the first one to do that shot, at least in modern times.
But you certainly know what he's fond of. I mean, it's really interesting that he works really well with very dark shots and sets and sequences.
Certainly things, big patches of darkness
and then
in places.
Things are, the story is told with, you know, kind of the minimal light. And I really enjoyed that. Like, the plates coming through to us were just so sensationally beautiful that it's just a really lovely, was a really lovely project to work on.
It is a nice change having everything being kind of dark as opposed to being massively overlit, as a lot of movies are, particularly when everything's just shot on a green screen.
Yeah.
That was a nice, and obviously that's a large part down to Greg Fraser, the DP.
Definitely.
So they had some interesting choices in terms of cinematography on the movies because there was, obviously, like there's a lot of nods to sort of like 70s crime thrillers in the film. Matt, you know, referenced things like Chinatown and Clute and Taxi Driver. There's All the President's Men. There's a few more touch points for as well. And the Parallax View too, particularly with the end sequence. But there's a lot of sort of, you know, head nods and trying to conjure up the atmosphere in a lot of ways to those sorts of stories because, you know, really the story in this case is like a detective thriller rather than like being an action movie, which we've seen a lot of times before. So that's kind of like the new take on the character and on the story. So they made some choices to, I don't think it was the only reason why, but certainly like the lensing was very sort of inspired by that sort of look from a lot of like the 70s stuff where, you know, everything, we're anamorphic and everything's sort of very distorted and quite soft towards the edges of frame. And so Greg had worked with Arri to detune a bunch of lenses. They were using Arri's alphas, large format anamorphics, and they detuned a second set to, really increase the focus fall off and vignetting towards the edges of frame. So there's a lot of shots where it's basically, you know, the person's head in the center of frame is about the only thing that's sharp in the whole image and everything else is super soft. Which combined with the fact that Matt really likes to shoot everything wide open and quite close up, just gives you these really almost sort of dreamlike images where you just have your subject just in focus in the middle of the frame, just with this kind of impressionistic background around it, which is pretty beautiful. And they are that really interesting DI process as well, where they filmed out to the finishing step in DI was printing everything to negative, then processing it, and then scanning it back in. So again, sort of like a nod to those older movies where you have a very heavy film grain.
Yeah.
They did run a bleach bypass on it as well, so you get that even more grain and a more contrasty, desaturated image, which certainly creates a unique look. I think I said a couple of times, I think it helped us a lot because it tends to munge everything together a little bit in the image, so definitely helps integrate the CG. I think there's a lot of people sort of say, well, why bother? So I've definitely seen people saying, like, why does it matter? Like, why do that? Does it make the movie any better? And well, no, of course it doesn't. But like, if you can, why not? I think it's a fun thing to do, to try and explore different ways of creating a certain look. If we wanted to labor for weeks and weeks and weeks, yes, we could do that sort of thing in comp if we really wanted to. But why spend all that extra time on something that you can just run a a chemical process on? I'm like, yeah. I thought it was fun. They did something similar Greg, I think, did the same thing for Dune as well, but without the bleach bypass part of it. And yeah, it definitely helped create a unique look for the film, I think, which is kind of cool. It's amazing when you see the final images, like how flickery everything is because of that process. There's brightness changing sort of every frame, but it's it definitely made it feel sort of more organic and tangible to me, I think, which is kind of nice. It was good. But I mean, lensing wise, we had to do a bunch of work to try and reproduce that stuff in 2D, didn't we?
Yes, we did. I remember looking at the plates first couple of times and just going, what? And it was horrific and glorious at the same time, just trying to deconstruct what's happening to the image and how you then apply that to CG and stuff and matte paintings that you're integrating. And I think in the end we got it down, but it was great. I remember looking at plates, especially for Mitchell's memorial sequence, the first stuff that we were looking at. Yeah. And I was just chatting to Ben Morgan, one of the other leads, about, we've got this kind of zoom-like smearing on the edges of the frame, and look at how that light or that tracking marker, look how far that's going. And then you chat me and go, where's the radial smear of this? And I was like, what radial smear? I don't see any radial smear. He goes, look at this. So it's looking at things that are in front of the plane of focus, and they get this radial smear. So there's some great shots that show that at the end of the chase sequence where Batman is walking up to Penguin in the car upside down, and you see the rain, just this kind of circular motion in the rain. But just trying to figure that out in the first instance was just incredible. So just applying that, and the image doubling and the aberration, and just kind of breaking that down and then trying to replicate that was a tough challenge, but a really satisfying one to kind of knock on the head and go, yeah, we can do this confidently. So I was really happy that we were able to do that.
How did you do it? Was it just a bunch of sort of like individual observations that you replicated?
Just looking at those plates for a long time. But just kind of looking at components, like what did highlights do? What did bright colours do? Where did the aberration, in towards the centre did the aberration start? And just you pointing out that plate going, oh, it's radial here. And it's just going, I hadn't seen that in any other plate. So
I think actually on reflection later on, it's not actually radial so much. It's that it's out of focus, but it's squished along the direction.
It ends up looking
like a radial blur, but it's sort of the opposite of when it's in the far focus, so it's stretched.
But then just going, well, how do we practically replicate that feeling? And it's, I guess my bent is I consider myself less of a technical compositor than a creative one. So just trying to narrow down, like, can we create this and get the same feeling of that lens? Do we have to vary it on different shots? And depending on the depth of, the focus depth and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So figuring out that was a big challenge. We ended up doing it mostly with STMap kind of stuff. And the doubling we kind of did manually when we could see that it was an obvious thing that we needed. And then we went into like all the bokeh stuff that was happening, which is crazy. And we were really lucky to be able to get a lot of reference from the client, some beautiful, beautiful shots, even shots that they'd cut. But firstly, the incredible bokeh we were getting through the anamorphic lenses and then trying to replicate, because shooting in the dark, shooting wide open, you get giant bokeh on some of these shots. And particularly where Greg had shot, you know, the motorcycle, you know, you're focusing on the fuel tank of the motorcycle, so everything else is out of focus. And then you can really see the features of the lenses and anything that's on the lens, and then going, all right, well, you know, the lenses are, you know, the bokeh is lemoning over here, but we're getting a vignette pattern over there and we can see the dirt. And, you know, it was great doing some tests, actually stealing the bokeh from some of these reference plates, but then realizing, look, we're not going to be able to get the feeling because we can't get the vignette moving across the bokeh as it should. So Ben was able to do a deep dive into our defocus tools with the good Peter Hillman and kind of pick all of that apart. And I think this is the one show where we got really advanced on that, where it really mattered, because a lot of the time, you know, you're wanting to the bokeh to look right and then you've got other things to concentrate on. But this, like, it's Greg had made this kind of the star of some of those shots. And yeah. So we really had to pick them apart and try and replicate how they were made. So that was great. And Ben and I are just like bokeh nerds. And
They're so pretty.
And that's not even – we're not even going to caustic flares yet. But so the bokeh was just, to be able to pick that apart and get that working really well was really satisfying. It was great.
I mean, in the dailies room, just looking at the work that you guys like over the months, and just the developments of all the lensing and optic stuff, just my mind was blown. It's like a new lensing or optics like definitions to me.
I
haven't seen anything like that before.
Like the detail that we had to go into and that we managed to execute it, like in the end, I'm so proud of that work and I'm so proud of that team. It's genuinely one of the – it is the best show that, you know, I've ever been involved with in regards to pushing that art and us being able to replicate that and make it just look so pretty. Yeah, very satisfying. Yeah. I'm so happy about it. So proud.
From a lighting perspective as well, and obviously Greg had done – there was a lot of, you know, interesting spectra to a lot of the sources. Like he's using – there's a lot of sodium vapor, although maybe not. Actually, I never got a chance to ask Greg about this, whether it was actually sodium vapor or not on a bunch of these things, because there was definitely some where it was an orange gel over an LED, looking at the comparisons we were doing. But there was a lot of interesting sources that came into play with that. Yeah, the sodium lights and LEDs, a bunch of like fluorescence in a lot of places, which I think give the photography a kind of a unique look as well. It's because it's quite a subtle thing in terms of color rendition, but you can tell the difference. I think it ends up, and I always found like looking particularly at a lot of the Gotham photography, like, and in the Batcave as well, everything just has that kind of slightly sickly off-kilter feeling. I guess that's probably because of our association with like fluorescent lights with like hospitals and school rooms and that kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. And obviously famously they lent on that in The Matrix quite a lot for, you know, there's the difference between The Matrix and the real world and using that sort of fluorescent green tone. But here it ends up being, I think, it just makes Gotham feel kind of sick just because of this pallid light on everything, because of the way it tends to, both fluorescence and the vapor lights tend to flatten colors quite a lot. I mean, from a lighting perspective in CG, like, was that a thing? Like, did you have to do a lot of stuff to try and replicate that?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously the Batcave was mostly CG, so we had to just to understand the language and then put those language back to the CG set and to light it that way. And for the car chase, I think it's the sodium vapor. I mean, it's lucky that we the spectra data we got for the sodium vapor, it ended up looking quite close to what they have on set.
Yeah.
So that was kind of easy. Well, because we have the tool that being a spectral renderer, we can do that.
Can actually replicate that properly.
Exactly. And once we get there, and then everything else, like all the CG assets, all the colors just looks right under that light.
Yeah. I don't know how you'd actually do, because I was thinking about this. I don't know how you'd actually do that in an RGB.
Well, I was wondering that too.
Because I know there was a time when we were looking at doing, we were going to do the Batcave more with the Environments Department in Clarice. They ended up doing City Hall, and we moved the Batcave back into our main pipeline, partially because of how much like fluorescent sources there were there. But like I don't know how you do it with an RGB render for something like The Chase, where you've got a mixture of very strong sodium vapor lights for all the street lights. So that's creating this very orange cast over everything, where all the colors are very muted. But then all the headlights are like LED, so they're much like sort of broader spectrum. And so those react, like create much more natural, quote unquote, natural renditions of colors. And I don't know how you'd actually mix that. Like the only way I could think of trying to do that would be doing something like rendering, like splitting apart the light passes and then doing a process in 2D afterwards to sort of try and desaturate and recolor the sodium lamps to create that sort of muted colors effects, but then not doing that process to the LED sources to try and put it back together again. It just sounds like a real headache, basically.
Before coming to
Beck
here,
shaking your head, like, I'm so glad you didn't ask me to do that.
Nope.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. It's almost like if you just do it in RGB, like what you're saying, do it in COM, or do you like two different setting, like in COM, or basically you want to have two different set of look depth as well, like because like under sort of a muted color, like sodium vapor, your color looks muted and different than the normal RGB LED light.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky.
It's nice just to be able to just press the render button and it comes out looking sort of right at the other end. You know, yeah, you get, exactly. Just get those effects for free.
I'm very grateful.
Let's talk about the Batcave. We touched on there being fluorescent sources in there, but you personally did a lot of, you know, the lighting design really for the Batcave environment. I mean, obviously based on what Greg did on set, but what's on set's quite a small piece of what the actual final shot.
Well, it was a fun task for me, and I think it is quite a rare task for a person with a role like me as well on the show. Well, I was lucky that I was on the show quite early on, and Anders just basically tasked me what do you think you can do with the a set of concept models? Can you maybe do some shaders and lighting to it? And at the time, it was for it's like a concept past, so that we know what we are dealing with before we build the hero set. So basically we went off pipe. So we used, because the brief from Anders was just get it done as soon as possible.
That's often the brief,
funny,
actually.
Funny
yeah.
About that.
Make it look great, get it done as soon as possible. Don't fuck it up. Yeah, that's the brief.
Yeah. And so we went off pipe. We used some two sets that basically I can do most of it within one application and just bang it out. So we done some texture shaders and some lighting design based on what Greg did on set. And so get it in shot as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So it was quite a fun few months.
Yeah.
It was really nice actually seeing that. Like I started a little bit later, but seeing that stuff coming through, it was really great to kind of see, ooh, we're staying dark. Ooh, there's a pool of light over there.
It didn't stay quite as dark as the first version, though. I was a little bit sad about that.
But it was kind of really lovely to see those subs coming through of where you were going with it.
And it's quite a vast space as well.
Yeah, massive.
Yeah, it kind of like every iteration is just in dailies. So Anders and I were just looking at it. Oh, where would Greg put lights?
Yeah.
Like try to like think how he would think on set. And but it turned out pretty good.
It's really nice to be able to have the creative space to do that as well. Like being able to, I mean, that's where I have the most enjoyment is, you know, the look dev and contributing early on to mm-hmm. those kind of big decisions of how we handle Boker, how you light the Batcave. I find that so satisfying, and to be able to contribute in that way in the look dev. Yeah. And yeah, watching those come through is great.
Yeah. I should probably just explain the process, just because we've sort of talked about why it was fun and good, but not what we actually did. So we had rough models from the production art department that they'd built in Rhino, I think, I want to say, that we used as the basis for the partial set build they did on stage at Leavesden Studios in the UK. The partial set build basically being the alcove where he's got the Batmobile and a short section of the platforms in front of those, that where he's got like his, you know, workbenches and mm-hmm. gym equipment and all that sort of stuff. And you always have a bit of a difficulty, I guess, when approaching a build like that, where it's like you don't know what you're going to need until you've actually finished the shot. So how do you try and get a sense of that? And that's why I was keen for you to just get in there and, you know, and try and rough things out, was especially knowing that so much of it was going to be in darkness. We didn't want to just kick off our, you know, models and look dev departments on working everything up to, you know, A+ Weta quality, and then obviously never seeing anything because, whoops, there goes the budget. Yeah. I mean, we would have never got it done in time. But you were able just like to throw your own sort of shape materials and textures together in Substance, and then just bring that in, just working on top of the art department models.
Yeah, and then just bring the texture back in Solaris, and then just render with PLMN from there. It was good. It was, my background was like many years ago was sort of a generalist mm-hmm. background, but I haven't done something like this like for a long time, so it's good to able to do it again.
Yeah, and then as you sort of refined and I guess got us to a more steady state, and the notes were becoming smaller and smaller in terms of the lighting, then we took those pieces that you'd done and sort of, you know, made them legit, I guess we'd say, like gotten through the pipeline. But at that point we already knew, like, okay, this part we need to actually spend real time on because we see it, this part in the background.
We're going
to
need a train with Wayne. We're going to need a train.
Oh, the train, Jesus. But like most of the cave walls, for instance, we barely saw any of apart from one small section. We threw light on it, so we didn't need to waste a huge amount of time doing that.
I always think we should be seeing Caesar kind of creep through the...
with a torch.
Yeah.
Coming out of that little tunnel with a torch. Yeah. Yeah. Then go, oh, bugger, wrong set. Oops. And go back again. Yeah.
Andy, which movie are you on?
That was the one thing that we never actually got to do that we wanted to do, was to just do a shot of, because obviously Andy Serkis is playing Alfred, and there's a bunch of shots that were quite reminiscent of some of the shots we did in Apes, where he's all sad because he's just had a family tragedy. And it was just screaming out to put Caesar in there and just comp a version and send it over. But I didn't really have time to do that, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Next time, Batman 2, we'll do it.
Yeah. We'll do that. I have to mention caustic flares because they're my favourite thing ever now.
Sorry, I've been holding out. We should talk about that.
Caustic flares were a big part of this show because you can see with a lot of Greg's other shots, he's got a lot of water splashing on the lens from cars driving past, and he lets it run off, and it's these beautiful kind of caustic patterns that happen with the light refracting through the water. Mm-hmm. And obviously for the chase they couldn't do that, so instead, and it's kind of interesting to think of this in a, you know,
I think they're doing it everywhere just because, like, it wasn't a question of they couldn't get things wet or that things weren't wet, it was a stylistic choice. Like, there's a bunch of stuff in Gotham as well,
all right.
Like, they're just like adding up. Like, those, the two reference shots we were looking at all the time of the Batmobile and coming up under the L train and Catwoman on her bike driving past. Yeah.
No, but that was, they were doing that all the time. But I think because obviously they were shooting the car chase dry, so they didn't kill people, which is always good.
That's a good reason.
He got all of the silicon sealant blobbed on those plates to get that caustic effect.
Because you definitely wouldn't have got that naturally, you weren't splashing stuff.
So that's where my thinking went, and it was kind of like a reverse. You know, I had to reverse engineer why the hell is that there, but it was like I remember having a meeting with you, Stephen, and Christos, and we're going, what the hell are we gonna do?
We're like, how even if we do in CG, like render you like elements, how do we even do that?
Like, what are we, like, yeah. what are we even making here? And Chris was going, it's a magic spell. And I'm going, it's a nebula. It's so, it's just, and then you went, it's something they put on the lens.
Yeah, let's just shoot the damn thing.
Let's go and shoot it. I was like, yes. So Anders and I spent a afternoon blobbing stuff on glass plates and shining a torch through it. And there's almost about an hour of footage that we've got. And it's just glorious and I just want to watch it all the time. It is the most beautiful thing. And we got an hour of it. We didn't use the whole hour, obviously, in the film, but we were able to kind of pick out parts of it because it was really interesting trying to break down and like see how this thing was constructed. So you have, you know, the light source, which is quite bright and it's a street light and it's off in the distance. And then you have that going through the silicon sealant and refracting, but the silicon sealant is on a piece of glass and you see that shape as well. So you've got this caustic effect, nebula, magic spell, whatever we want to call it, you know, kind of, and it's got a little bit of parallax as well as the camera, you know, as the, you know, the light's moving with the camera move. And so you've got this thing contained by the shape of the sealant on the glass. And because it's very dark, it's actually really hard to see that until you see it kind of the edges of it cut off or it moves around. So trying to make the rules of how we then apply the ones later on in the sequence. So, you know, it was great to be able to go, well, we can put this in other shots. This is amazing. So, you know, but what are the rules to do it? So we had to, you know, make up shapes that are obviously, you know, some stuff splashed up against the lens, and then we move this caustic shape through it. And it was glorious.
I really enjoyed it. Matt wanted to put it on every bloody shot.
And even I was going, whoa.
We added it into like everything, basically.
Anything we had brake lights.
Which made me a little bit like, at first.
But it was pretty, like, it wasn't even as strong as the one in the actual.
No, we get away with playing it quite subtle for a lot of the cases. Yes. Yeah. I just hate putting shit on the lens because
I know.
I come from a long and storied history of visual effects where if CG's not good enough, then you just push it all over the lens to try and munge it all together so no one can see it.
But, you know, this show was, you know, was all about the lenses. It was all about how, you know, the lenses, smeared and rotated and zoomed and, you know, all that.
Which is true, but it's still like the fact that the reason I was so leery about doing it so much is just because the CG looked really bloody good.
It did.
Like the stuff that we had, like from lighting and effects, and it just went particularly on that shot where we're mounted on. I think the first big one where we really did it was that trailer shot where we're mounted on the back of the Batmobile as he's driving up between the traffic, and the CG looked fucking fantastic. And I just thought, I don't want to cover it all up with stuff. We worked so hard at this and we're just going to cover it. But it's not that we were covering up. We were just putting the finishing touch on to make it look great.
Mitchell, and a special shout out to Saki Mitchell and Paul Redican for doing a huge amount of those. And Ivy DPs, who did an amazing job comping, you know, those CG, a lot of those CG shots, and just like... Paul shot where, you know, you've got window wipers in front.
I love that.
You're in, you know, the Maserati and you've got the window wipers going, and he's got all of the, you know, it's full CG except for the window wipers, basically.
Well, the window wipers are just a matte, aren't they?
It's just a matte.
It's not even the plate. It's rotoed off the plate, but they're not real either.
It's glory, like the smearing of the lights, you know, as those move and
That's when we're in the Batmobile.
Is it the Batmobile?
Yeah, it's the shot where the truck crashes into the overpass and where it's Batman's POV. And the wipers go across and all of the streaks go one way and they go back the other way and they change direction.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it looks so good.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And you've got all the reflections of the lights in the cockpit of the Batmobile as well, which we created. It's
glorious.
Looked really, really good.
Paul's an amazing photographer as well. So, you know, it's just sweet.
I think one of my favourites of those was Saki's one where No, no, not that one. Even I'm just thinking about the flares. Even the behind the Batmobile as he's when he's just dodged the truck earlier in the sequence, and then he's doing the big donut, and then just before he goes up, and it just sweeps across camera. It looks really, really good.
I love the plate is amazing, but we couldn't, for whatever reason, we had to do a CG Batmobile of just the one where we're looking at the back of the Batmobile, and he's just going along. And it's
trailer one in 1940. Everyone who's listening will know what the shot numbers were. So that's what I was
saying. It's such a stunning shot, that shot.
It is.
I mean, it was a stunning plate, and that we had to end up doing.
There was a good reason why we made it all CG.
It's other than
because
we
can. I can't remember what it was now, but there was a very good reason.
We could match the motion blur. It was because the motion.
It was also because we're adding a lot of. Vehicles in the ahead of the traffic.
That's why he was driving through traffic. Exactly. Yeah. That's why.
Because the place of that shot, it's just the Batmobile on its own. There's no traffic in front of it.
You're right. Yeah. That's why. Yeah. And so and then because we went through an interesting process on a lot of those shots where initially I was like, okay, well we're adding CG stuff in the foreground or we're replacing the Batmobile. We'll keep the background, right? Because I want to keep something real And then it just got, as we went, deeper and deeper into the comp, then obviously the integration becomes more and more of a pain, but the CG was getting better and better.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, let's just make the whole thing CG.
Yeah.
And we did that on a lot of shots. And, there's a bunch of shots where there's like little pieces of the plate just because the flaring of the lights through the fog and smoke in the background was really nice. But even then, there's a lot of shots where we just replaced that as well because we, Rachel and you had done like a lighting setup for putting the light through smoke on the other side of the road, and we were able to replicate that as well. So I think the one that most impressed me is the one, I think you lit it and Austin comped it, when he's drifting around the container. We're sort of driving just on the other side of the road, and like that just looks incredible. Like it just it looks totally real.
That one, and there's one of Andrew's one where he's having to put a whole lot of CG behind a flare and the plate and the rain and all of that stuff. Just glorious.
Yeah, no, he did a fantastic job comping that, because that's always a nightmare trying to put things under lens flares.
Yeah. Big shout out to Eva Snyder, who unfortunately didn't get to comp much of the chase sequence, but was an awesome lead on Mitchell's Memorial and lots of matte painting stuff that we had to do. So, yeah, just a shout out. Shout out to her.
Shout out to everyone. Should we just go through the list of everybody, because everybody was awesome on this. They really
were. It's true.
Yeah.
Everyone was awesome. But, there's some crazy shots that are full CG, and I still go, hang on, which one?
Yeah, which bit? Do we use the plate?
One's full CG. No, we didn't. Yeah. Just amazing.
What was your favourite shot?
I think the one of Paul's. I do love there's the shot of the one that you like, of Colin swearing at Batman going, I got you. Where it comes through the practical Batmobile, like everyone goes, it's a CG Batmobile going through those flames. It's like, no,
but it is a CG Maserati.
Yes, in the CG, and it's a CG Maserati, and it's just great to go. I love explosions, and so there's that shot, and the one that Saki did of the trucks going over and the explosion happening, and the fact that he had to take every single explosion that we had in the library, and then the complexity of that composite is insane. Changing the road speed, reflections on the road that get reflected in the car, the explosion, having to take all of these explosions from our library, filmed on different stocks,
had different colors,
different white points, different temperatures, different, clipping points, arranging those in space on cards, then having to render them out for Ray so she could render the reflections. It's incredible. And the fact that they worked together so well on that shot is amazing. Like everyone was, like Ray was great, and, Paul was also saying, just love working with Ray's renders. It's just amazing. So, shout out to Ray.
Everyone loves Ray. Oh, Rachel, not Raymond.
That's one of my favourite shots.
That's a pretty cool one.
Yeah, I have to say I really love this Batmobile, like the muscle car Batmobile. It's just, I grew up in a rural area with lots of boys and muscle cars, so, you know, it tweaks something in my teenage, my teenagehood, which, yeah, so loved it.
You like a good hoon, do you?
Oh, I love a good hoon. I could say it in a very Australian accent, but I won't.
What was your favourite shot, Steve?
I like the one that Maserati sort of a tumble and then slam on the ground with the Batmobile sort of swirling to stop, and then the Batmobile Maserati came overhead. It's pretty nice simulations.
That was pretty complex. Pretty awesome. Christos did a lot of the effects for the Bat, and Sarah. Oh, I've forgotten her surname. I feel terrible.
Sarah Yu?
Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
I think so. Yeah. So, I'm sorry, Sarah. I've forgotten your surname. But you did a fantastic job. And you did all of the, or at least you did the setup for all of the, you know, the really splashy.
The rooster tail.
The rooster tail stuff. Yeah. Which became a big thing towards the end because we had to.
Get wetter and wetter,
making it wetter. Yeah. And so we needed to add much more spray. And so we had to jump into, you know, like actual fluid simulations for the water, kind of like getting sloshed around by all the vehicle's wheels at the end of the scene. That culminated in that shot in particular where Batmobile's, like, as you say, skidding to a stop and want spray coming up all over the camera, and then just clearing in time.
I was kind of sad we didn't get to do more of that on the camera, you know, like it almost felt like it needed just to be whoosh, like a wave of stuff.
You just love putting stuff on the camera back, don't
you? I'm a compositor.
Just think how expensive it is. I mean, in terms of destroying cameras, not intensity. But not really, of course, because it's not real. I don't know where I was going with that.
I think that shot has all the hero effects, water element in one shot.
Yeah.
You got rain, wheel spray, rooster tail,
splashes,
the effects that crown splashes.
Yeah, and then all the destruction of the Maserati.
Yeah, everything.
And Chris does such a good job on that stuff. Like the animation. Worked out really nicely as Andrew Silky was animating it, because that is a hard thing to do, is getting the dynamics or something like that right, like getting the right sense of weight and momentum, and art directing the bloody thing as well.
I love that Dennis said, we had to animate it differently, like in a U shape, so we
banana over camera. So we're like, what? you never told me you cheated like that. It's like, yeah. Sneaky bugger. They did a lovely job on that, and then Christos just did all of like the stuff deforming and bending and glass smashing, and
that's great,
like steam coming from the busted radiator and like rain misting off of the top of the car. That's the one shot where we did do the rain spraying off of the car surface. And it did look pretty good.
I have to say that, like, I mean, apart from explosion shots, which were my favourite, there's two other shots. There's the shot that I had to do that I think I had for the whole show of turning Rick into Rob, where he shoots the, you know, where he's all defocused and he shoots the grapple gun.
Oh, WSC.
It's like, oh, my God, it was the whole show.
Yeah, because we had to do a version for the trailer, and then wanted to redo it because Matt wanted to change the timing of his breathing.
Open his mouth.
We finally got to the point where he's like, that looks like Rob. And then it's like, oh, can you just change his facial expression? Yeah. Like,
So sure, there's that shot. But Ivy's shot at the end where you get that iconic, like, it's amazingly well composed, like, as in just the composition of the shot of the upside down POV of Pengy, crashed Pengy, and Batman walking towards him with the cape. Because I thought those shots looked amazing without the cape, and then actually I was glad to be proved wrong, where I thought the cape's going to get in the way of the explosion.
That was my worry as well. I thought it was totally going to fuck the shot.
But it looked amazing.
It did.
It looked amazing. So, and again, big ups to Ivy for that. What is seemingly a really simple composite, which isn't.
No.
Because
you have to get the tricky part there is obviously because. So
they're in front of them.
So for everyone who's listening, like, contrary to what people have been claiming on Twitter, those shots were not completely live action because.
No.
Because Batman's. We had to do a bunch of capes on the show. It was also that really cool shot where he's walking up to just before he goes into the iceberg lounge, where it's like super in your face.
Yeah.
But yeah, those shots where the penguin's looking out at him and he's upside down, and you see the flame in the background, and then the huge wall of flame. So the flame is amazing. The flame of the Batmobile is real.
Gorgeous.
Basically, yeah, the cape and most of Batman are not. The cape, because the practical cape was just, you know,
because they had practical. They did shoot that wet.
Because they weren't driving down the road. So that actually had a rain machine there. So as soon as the practical cape got soaking wet, it just got heavy, as cloth
like
tends to do.
Was it they said it looked like a trash bag.
Yeah, it looked like a black bin liner because it all bunched up under its own weight. And Matt wanted it to be, you know, flowing out heroically in the wind. And so they took the cape off of him, and we had to add a CG cape, and which is, you know, cape
seems easy.
Well, capes are always a freaking nightmare because, like, you get into like art directing, like what they do, and like, then the simulation doesn't work because you're trying to art direct something that, you know, you can't simulate something to look real and also do exactly the performance you want, as we well know from other cape movies that we've done recently. But then once you put the cape on him, and actually. Jeffrey got that sim done pretty quickly, all things considered. We didn't do too many iterations.
At the end of the show where the cape, the actual cape is the practical cape.
And
he said, make it look like that.
And
I was like, okay.
Yeah, he did a great job getting that sim done. But then once you try and put it on him, because Batman's standing in front of a huge light source, being that big wall of flame, suddenly the flaring around Batman's edges don't make any sense anymore.
Yeah.
So
it's not a constant flaring. It's
no, it changes as the brightness of what's behind him changes as the fire gets hotter and colder. And so you have to remove the flaring where the cape joins his body and then add it over the cape and
recreate
those new
the
bits.
Flaring.
Yeah, recreate it. So lots of, we had, you know, CG Batman match moves already, so we rendered him out, and Ivy patched a lot of him in order to get rid of the flaring and join him onto that, and then to recreate all that flaring over Batman.
It's very fiddly because when it doesn't look right, it really doesn't look right. But she did a great job of those shots.
Particularly because she got it essentially done, and then I'm like, oh, can we just do one more version? Because like with the one thing we didn't quite have was like the anamorphic stretching on the flare wasn't right. And so she very graciously did one more version, and it looks awesome. Looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a favorite. I still think I prefer the slow motion version from the trailer of that.
Yeah.
Of 48. But I think the first shot when he's just getting out of the car and starts walking towards I think that's the better one.
Well, there's glorious boots that we didn't, you know.
Yes, like, your boot paint. Man, it was, boot zip paint out was the best. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you were like, oh, we're going to have to do CG boots, and we're going to have to match move, and we're going to have to build them. And I'm just like, hold my beer.
Don't be stupid.
Hold my beer.
Let me show you how it's done.
Yeah. Came back with a test the next morning, and it was like, oh, yeah, that's going to work.
Yeah, and then spent quite a lot of time actually making
it
work properly.
Oh, then I just passed it off to someone else.
So poor master had to do a lot of that. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I got a most of that.
You proved that it could work.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the fun
part. I got
the
beer.
Yeah.
I'd like to say thank you. Thanks again to the production team, Sophie, James, Britt, Vicky, Natasha, and Sani.
And Tim,
thank you, Tim. I think you did a great job looking after us. It was a really, like, I felt our team was really looked after, and everyone was concerned about, you know, how happy people were, and, you know, it's just amazing. So you guys, thank you very much. And also thank you to my amazing comp team. Thank you to Ben Morgan and Eva Snyder. Incredible leads, an incredible team. Pete and Musa, fantastic. Just everyone on the team, you know who you are. I love you all dearly, and I want to work with you again very, very soon. Just amazing. Very humbled.
Yeah.
And very grateful.
Yeah, I would say particularly the people who aren't here, like Christos, Pilaros, our effects supervisor.
Dennis
Yu, our animation supervisor.
I think all the peeps in the pre-production asset department as well, they've done pretty good.
Yeah, Jason Desjardins layout in particular was ordered from the very start, like trying to figure out the Batcave and then doing all the stuff with the chase.
Fabio, Mark, done pretty good. Mm-hmm. Very good
look dev
and digitables.
Yeah, we got we had a great team all the way through. It was really cool.
Mm. Great show. Thank you to you, Anders. I had a great time. Thank you, Stephen.
Me too.
Had a great time.
Yeah. You were
I had a great time as well.
I was all right. It's my curse.
Yeah, no, it was a really fun show, actually. It was it was like time pressure wise was kind of crazy, but it never really felt too stressful, I think.
No, it never felt like it was careening off the rails, and you know, I think, you know, we always
felt, we were on the road.
Yeah, we were on the road, damn it. it was never like we can't ever do, like, we're not, how are we going to do this? I mean, there was a lot of that, but it was like, yeah, we can do this. Like, there was so many, like, problem, here's a potential solution, and, you know, lots and lots of clever people helping out. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really good experience.
And a beautiful show, like, just beautiful.
Yeah. It is good, like, from time to time to work on a show that is actually have some nice plates.
Oh, yeah.
What are you saying about your current movie, Stephen?
No, I didn't say anything. But you know, when it's quite often that most of the movies like shot in soundstage or like backlot, other than actual locations, and it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
It's nice dealing with stuff where there's actually stuff in the plate.
Yeah.
And cream screens. I'm glad they use cream screens on City Hall. I know that you love them, Beck, very dearly, right?
Oh my gosh. If I say that I love them, every compositor on this planet would be after my blood. Honestly, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, but they make the shots look really good.
Shh. You pull a key, buddy.
I don't have to. I've got you for that.
Oh my god! Yeah, I can't condone cream screens.
Yeah, I'd say I wouldn't use them everywhere.
Yeah,
I wouldn't use them everywhere. But for something like City Hall, where you've got lots of bright surfaces,
if you're going to do that, you have to rearrange your artist workforce. You need a lot more roto. It takes a lot longer to do, and you need compositors experienced in adventurous edge blending, as we ended up calling it.
Yeah.
I mean, we got it to work, but you need a lot of roto time because you can't pull a key. And I would say they were lit beautifully, and if you spent the same time lighting a blue screen that way, then you would get beautiful keys. And you can change the colour of the disc.
No, you can't. People's faces never look right.
No, they don't.
They never look right.
No, I can't. Nope. I will fight you.
All right, parking lot. Now, we're done.
You've been listening to Anders, Beck and Stephen on Unsupervised, a Studio 801 production. Until next time, thanks for listening.